Hello, and welcome to Total Mind Success Podcast. My name is Donick S. Cause. My guest today is Marty McGivin. She is a humorist, inspirational speaker, stand-up comic, and certified mental health professional. She is the author of Never Give Up. She has appeared at the Hollywood Improv and the Comedy Store. So, Marty, welcome to the show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, hi, Dan. I think it is going to be a lot of fun. And thank you for having me on as a guest. Oh, by the way, my book is Never Give In to Fear.
Okay, yeah, I must have botched that one. So
that's all right.
Just for the record here, Marty's book is Never Give In to Fear. She's got a lot of great information there. It's, I guess, both motivational, inspirational, because she's had quite a life. As a matter of fact, Marty, you were on the fast track to becoming a very successful stand-up comedian. What went wrong?
Well, drug addiction, actually. I didn't realize I was an addict. I thought I was just a recreational, you know, just a recreational user. And as a lot of comics were back in the 80s. But the other thing that took me off track was I met a guy that I thought was really, well, he was a handsome sociopath, but I didn't realize he was a, you know, he was a criminal I was attracted to him and got into this terribly destructive, abusive relationship with him, and it moved quickly. I mean, he broke me down quickly. And this is something that happens in abusive relationships. It's this kind of a destruction of the person. So, and even though I'm a very strong woman, and I was then, he got to me. So I was desperate to get out of that situation. We went downhill because we were both using drugs too. And when you get full on addiction, it does not take long for things to really go bad. And I ended up living in my car and with him, couldn't get away from him. And he was he had this terrible temper, and it was just a nightmare. And I was desperate to get out of that situation. And I did something that a lot of addicts do. I didn't see the options available. I had this kind of tunnel vision, and addiction is a disease characterized by lack of choice. I know that now because I'm a mental health professional and I've studied it. But I was so desperate, and I had this I knew someone. You meet dangerous people when you're in the drug scene as heavily as I was, and I had met a woman who had offered me an opportunity to make money by working as an escort for her. And I rationalized that I could do it for a very short period of time. And the thing was, she was sending a girl every month to Japan. And I thought, well, you know, if I go, no one knows me in Japan. This is what I was thinking. You know, it's Japan. Nobody will ever find out. I just won't tell my family. I won't tell anybody I know. I'll go, and it'll, you know, just be there for whatever. I can maybe date some old Japanese businessmen or something and make some money and be able to get away from this boyfriend. Well, this is what I was thinking, though. I thought, you know, I can work this and I can get away and get to another city and then just start all over again. And I had this Tonight Show scheduled, and I thought, you know what, it'll be all right. And of course that was crazy, but I did it. I was just desperate, and that's pretty much par for the course for any human trafficking survivor. Is there's desperation, there's poverty, and there's a lot of times there's some kind of physical abuse going on, things like that. So anyway, when I went to Japan, I had a one-way ticket, and when I got there, I met my contact. He took me to an apartment building, and it was supposed to be a hotel. You know, they had told me this whole story of how it would be, but when I got there, they just took me prisoner, essentially, and it was turned out to be Japanese organized crime. And it was a really terrifying experience. If you can imagine being in another country where you don't speak the language, you're trapped in a little room, and you've been brutalized and threatened with death, and you just people aren't speaking English to you except to give you orders, and you know, I mean, it was like that. And I had to see a man every hour. It it was a nightmare, and I thought I was going to lose my sanity. But what I did at that point, I took stock of my situation, and I said, well, to myself, I made two promises. One of them was that I would be home by Christmas, and this was early November when I got there. And I said, I'm going to be home by Christmas, and I'm going to hang on to this visualization. No matter what happens on the outside, this is my reality, and I'm going home. And that's it. And I thought, you know, I was just going to hang on to that just to maintain and keep from going hysterical all the time. And, you know, when you're around people like that, if you are hysterical, they'll just kill you anyway. You know what I mean? So I had to, well, they will, you know. So that was what I did. And then the other promise I made to myself was that I was going to keep my dignity. And by doing that, I thought, well, you know, the best thing I can do is just to respect the people that come into contact with me and do the best I can to treat them with respect. And it, kind of like a golden rule thing. And that also gave me some peace of mind, you know, in a strange way, peace of mind in this awful situation. And so it turned out that the exact perfect person came into that place and helped me to escape. And when I got back home, I got home 2 days to the States 2 days before Christmas. So my visualization carried me through.
And I think it's very important that you help people to realize how powerful your visualization was and how effective it was for you, because you might have just given in and focused on your situation and your addiction and just ended up dying there probably in a short period of time. But
yeah, I think so. I really do. I think that the things that we think, all of us, our visualizations are powerful. And even if you have a default visualization, you know, if you're not making a conscious effort to make, you know, a conscious decision to visualize positive things and tell yourself good stories and create that positive view, then there's a default setting that you can go to that's the non-survival setting. And so I just made that active, proactive choice, and then I was fortunate enough that the person came in there, and he was a customer, but he was a smuggler. He was a member of another criminal organization. He was Chinese, and he escaped. So it was a miracle. And then when I got home, though, I kind of fell apart. You know, I was overwhelmed with fear. Yeah, I was just overwhelmed with fear and terror and shame and trauma. And I was so ashamed to go for help, and I was afraid to go to the police, and I never reported it. And I was terrified that the trafficker that had sent me, that something would happen, you know, that somebody would find me, that it would happen again. I was just terrified. And I did what a lot of trauma went through. I went back to that same boyfriend and back to the dope, trying to cope. And I didn't mean that to rhyme consciously. The dope, trying to cope.
Or the addiction thinking, yeah. That's what it's
yeah,
like.
Right. Yes, right. And I ran out of rope. But the boyfriend beat me up and almost killed me. And so at that point, I went up into the Russian River north of San Francisco. It's up in the Redwood Country. And I was kind of hiding out up there. And living, there were no homeless shelters back then. It was the 80s. It was, I was sleeping in abandoned houses and under bridges. I'm still too ashamed to call family or anyone. And just, I just completely lost everything, and I was just shut down. But just living from day to day, surviving. I was like that for a year. But during that year, which was one of the worst years of my life, the coolest thing happened. It's like, I carried around just the essentials for survival in a backpack, right? And I had this job chopping firewood. You know, I was chopping firewood with an axe on this firewood crew. Mm-hmm. And I would hitchhike, you know, from my abandoned house to the job site and hitchhike home. But anyway, I had just the essentials, but there was one non-essential item that I carried in my backpack, and it was a pair of fancy high-heeled dancing shoes, you know, that I had bought at a thrift store. I had those in my backpack, and I thought, you know what? Because one of these days, I'm getting it was like my tool of my vision, symbol of hope. You know, like one of these days, baby, I'm going dancing. You know, so I had that. It was my symbol. So one night, I was coming back, and it was really foggy and scary, and I just flagged down this car, and it stopped. And anyway, it was this guy who was so nice, and he was good looking, and he gave me a ride where I was going, and we were talking, and not only did we go dancing, but he's my husband today, and we've been together for 25 years. So that was a real turning point for me, and I like to share that story because for anyone who's out there that thinks, oh man, love never happens, or I'm never going to find a relationship until I get this certain grade of pay, or I'm going to have, it won't happen unless I get this breakthrough in my career or whatever. Love can find you even way at rock bottom because it happened to me.
That's so cool. Now, you also, did you not visualize a better life for yourself? So I guess that's part of it.
Yes, I did. When I was homeless, I would sort of act as if, because I thought, well, if I visualize my way out of Japan, and I was kind of on and off with my visualization at that point, because you know the chopping the wood and all, but and the drugs and so on. But I would just try to act as if I had a place to go, because I thought, well, if I just act like, you know, that as if I have somewhere to go and I have something to do and stuff, maybe it'll attract, you know. And so the first thing was meeting my true love. And then he had an apartment. He had a house, but it had like an apartment in the downstairs that needed fixing up. And he, offered me the opportunity to stay there and fix up the apartment and until I got on my feet, right? And so that was kind of how our thing started. But he was in the drug scene. We were both in the drug scene. So, we came out of drugs together and rebuilt our lives. But he went first. He was the first one. One time he came home from like getting the car out of impound or one of the other bits of drama that you have when you're in that life. And he said, hey, this drug thing is getting way out of hand. We got to quit. And I was like, what do you mean we? You know, like I was so stubborn. Yeah. But I did reach a point, you know, I saw his life getting better because he was changing and things were better. And I just couldn't deny it anymore. I tried to deny it, you know, but then I reached my jumping off point and I just thought, you know, I am so unhappy. And so this is what happened. I mean, I'm not trying to push anything religious or anything because it wasn't religious. It was just a spiritual crying out. And I just said, God, wherever you are, whoever you are, please help me because I'm so unhappy and I want to be happy. And at that point, I had this breakthrough moment where I had this thought, hey, maybe it's the dope. You know, for the first time in my junkie mind, I was like, hey, yeah, that's a good point, right? So that was like my miracle. That was my turning point. And I just, from then on, it's like I had a purpose. Then it was like, okay, I'm quitting the dope. And I told, you know, I told my dealers. And so I at that point, I was like this rock bottom dope fiend. I would show up at the drug houses with like a hubcap, like at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to trade a hubcap for a dime bag. I mean, I was just the most hopeless case. And I had my junkie pride though. So I thought I was going to be breaking it to these dealers like, oh, hey, you're going to lose my business. You know, I thought they were going to be really sad to see me go.
Yeah.
And I went over to a couple of these drug dealers' trailers, you know, telling them, hey, I'm sorry, but, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. And, I know I owe you $7, but I'm going to have to, you know, so I'd be paying them this. And they were overjoyed that I was getting clean. And that was so humbling for me because they'd be like, wow. Oh, that's wonderful. You know, like, they were so happy. And then, you know, that was a humbling thing. But it was nice, too, because I had from these dealers and I never had to see him again. And then, you know, I did things like mantras and positive visualization, positive self-talk. I employed these things. And, you know, it doesn't take long if you use these kind of things in day-to-day life, like a daily program of renewal. It just doesn't take long. And my first mantra was, there's hope after dope. And I would get up in the morning and I'd work out, you know, because I'd been a drug addict for like 9 years. I was all scrawny and I wanted to get in shape and get healthy. So I'd I start doing crunches, you know, and with every crunch, I'd be like, there's hope after dose.
Right. Isn't that like an ancient Sanskrit saying? There's hope after dose?
Yeah, that's it. They found it on some ancient tomb in India, right? There's hope after dope. But, you know, it's something that fuels the positive neurotransmitters in your brain. You know, when you do these kind of things. And then I'd give myself pep talks. I'd be like, you know, you can do it, Marty. You know, I would talk with myself and just say, hey, this is, you know, I'm on my way up. And it's amazing what that kind of thing will do for you when you're your own cheer block, you know, your own cheerleader, instead of having the default setting, which right. We all know what that is. So it's as if I'd been floating down this river of negativity for years, and it had carried me, you know, I washed up in this awful place of all this thing, and I just switched rivers, and now I'm going in this other river, this positive thought river that's heading to this wonderful destination. And, you know, the thing is, I think, well, you know, it's going somewhere, but it's not like maybe someday. It's the destination is here now. Like, it's good now, and I know it's going to get better. And even when it's not a really good thing, so, you know, even when there are challenges, this is still the good river, right? Because I know things are coming my way. So, this is the way. It's a game changer. It's just, and it's so simple just to stay in that positive moment and just say, you know what, this is not the pursuit of happiness. I don't have to chase happiness down and stab it with a spear and then, you know, take it home. I can just, it's not the pursuit of happiness. It's the conscious decision just to be happy.
That makes sense. Yeah, Marty, I'm not sure how much longer we can go on. You're such a downer. We have to end the show. Seriously, though. Well, you're now a mental health counselor and, I guess, an addiction specialist. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I have certifications in addiction treatment, and I have worked with addicts as a counselor. Right now, I'm a speaker, so I've done one-to-one motivation and counseling, but now I'm speaking one-to-many, and I'm bringing my message to people. So that's it. But yes, I do hold these certifications and I keep them current. And I have.
Any suggestions for people who are struggling like you were? They've hit rock bottom. They notice their life has got to change, but they just don't know how to begin. They're afraid to begin. They can't imagine life without their drug.
Some of the things that you can do. Well, one of the things is addiction is it is a disease. It's a primary disease, and that means it's not a derivative of another disease.
Right.
But it is also a chronic disease, so it develops slowly over time. And early in the disease, you don't notice it. Maybe it doesn't even show up. But then later, you know, that's how it happens. So as addiction picks up, I would define it as addiction this way. It's the compulsion to use the substance despite negative or even catastrophic consequences. So if there's this compulsion going on, you can't do this alone. This is something where you've got to get connected and stay connected to a support network. So, you know, that it would be connect with, find a counselor, find a therapist, see if you can get into a treatment facility, or go to 12-step groups are a wonderful resource. There are 12-step groups. If you don't like 12-steps, there are other support groups. You can look online. There are a lot of resources there. And you can, there's just a number of things. And the main thing is get yourself connected. Because this disease, addiction, thrives in isolation. It's going to multiply if you isolate yourself and you're not telling anybody about what's going on and you're not reaching out. You're just making it more. You're just getting deeper and deeper in. So reaching out and getting help and getting connected is the thing to do.
Okay. Now you're also doing public.
And not to be ashamed, because there are so many people out here that have the same thing. You know, that's the other thing. Don't even be afraid, because you might go to like one of those anonymous like 12-step meetings and see, you know, you might see your mayor there. So there's nothing to be afraid of.
Oh, we know why we passed that new city ordinance. Now the mayor's involved in it.
Yeah, right.
Well, Marty, yeah. You're doing some great work here. It's amazing how you turned your life around from what it was to what it is now. How can people find you?
Yes, my website is nevergiveintofear.com, and just spelled like that, nevergiveintofear.com. That URL will get you to my website, which is MartyMcGibbon.com, but I don't want to spell out my name like, you know, Alpha Bravo. It's easier just go to nevergiveintofear.com. And if you want to pick up my book is it's available just about everywhere. I have a big distributor, Atlas Books, and you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, whatever. Go to any bookstore and request it, because it's widely distributed. It's available internationally. And it's an e-book. It's on every ebook platform except Sony. For some reason, I'm not on Sony. I'm sorry about that, people. But you can also call, if you want to, 1-800-BOOKLOG. But if we're going to be on Twitter, nobody's going to pick up the phone. And my Twitter handle is @MartyMcG. So I have links to my book there, too.
That's MartiMacG.
Yeah, MartiMac as in cat, G as in George. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's @MartyMcGee. Lots of great stuff on her Twitter book, lots of great stuff on her website. Invite her out for a speaking engagement. She's very funny. As I said, she was a stand-up comedian for quite a while.
Yeah, so still do some stand-up, too.
There you go. So you get some great talks with a lot of humor, which is something we all need a little more of in our lives. So, Marty McGibbon, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today, and I wish you the best of luck in everything.
Well, thank you, Dan, and same to you. Have a beautiful evening.
Okay, you take care now.
All right, thank you again. Bye-bye.